Wir haben ja jetzt
I'm going to go to the next one.
What That's good, right? Hit the hardest part, it's the hardest. Although, if you're in the ring, we're gonna find out the more racism is gonna appear in this lecture again. Just get your wits on it. But not too much, right? It's gonna be something you've only seen before. But that's really new learning. Here, again, the second or third time. Anybody know what this is?
Brain.
Brain. How'd they do this? They took the brain, injected plastic, latex for this, latex into it, and then they put the brain into a vat, chemicals, and dissolved the brain. This is the actual blood vessels. There's a bunch of them, Mike. And your job is to learn all the names of all these vessels. Most of them don't even have a name. Right? There is no name for them. Small ones are unnamed, so we're not going to worry about the small ones. We're not going to do the major vessels anyway. Okay. Why do we care about blood vessels? We care about it because what happens to blood vessels? They typically clog up. Sometimes they break. It's bad to clog up. It's even worse to break. So we're going to talk about stroke. We're going to do different kinds of stroke. Okay. To explain why we care about in our anatomy about blood vessels. Here's a woman who's had a stroke. Well, she's got weakness. She has paralysis of the right arm. Anybody know what hemisphere she had a stroke in?
Left.
That's right. Left hemisphere. Good job. Right? Like this. And a stroke is of two kinds. As I mentioned, it would be a kind of stroke that makes a blockage in the vessel, or one that causes a rupture of the vessel. So rupture. It's also called a bleed. Fancy speak for bleed in medicine is what? Hemorrhage and bleed are exactly the same thing. It means a ruptured blood vessel. All different ways to say the same thing. So it can break, or if you have too many cheeseburgers, it can do this. It can clot off. That's a block. We're going to discuss both those kinds. We'll learn how to do the x-ray analysis, how to do MR analysis to figure out which one it is, that kind of thing. We're not going to do much about clinical risk factors for stroke unless you want to. Whatever you like. But anatomically speaking, blood vessels are conveniently divided up into two kinds. Two kinds. There's this kind and this kind. Two big arrows, right? The internal carotid system, the vertebral basilar system. The two main kinds. Carotid system, the vertebral basilar system. Another way to put it is anatomically in the brain, right? Which one of these is more anterior? This one, right? And so the most posterior one is this one. So we often call it the anterior circulation and the posterior circulation. So if I say anterior circulation, I'm talking about the internal carotid. By the posterior circulation, I mean the vertebral basilar system. Light blue, the posterior circulation, and dark blue, the anterior circulation. If you get the brain proper, you notice that it's kind of a line, right? It's not straight down like this, it's kind of like this. Why is that? Why is a line drawn this way? Why is it drawn straight up and down? Evolutionarily speaking, how did this come to be? Right, we're supposed to walk around. We're supposed to be quadrupeds, right? But anterior, posterior. The reason I mention that is you might be in the anterior circulation pretty far back in the brain, right? See, that's why it matters. When I say anterior and posterior, we're talking about the blood vessels and the territory that goes to kind of follows that pathway distinction, but not exactly. The details of this. If I were you, I'm not, but if I were you, I would take this diagram and mesmerize it. Because if you can do that, at least the ones I'm going to point out to you, you've got most of the lecture now. You've got the basic organization of the blood vessels, at least the arteries in the brain taken down. Something else we don't really care too much about, but I'm going to try ones that we do care about. This is the anterior or posterior circulation. Posterior circulation. They start with the vertebral arteries. That's where the beginning part is. The vertebral arteries come up the spine, travel up the spine, the spinal arteries. They're right here. Here's the medulla, the brainstem. This is the spinal cord. Vertebral arteries come up the vertebrae. That's the name, right? They come up and they join, they fuse together. It's kind of weird, right? You have two on each side, and all of a sudden, they go to one. That causes problems with the brain. Blood supply, that's the way it's organized. They come together, and they come together in the BA. What does the BA stand for? Basal artery. So the vertebral artery into the basal artery. It's the base of the pons. Easy way to remember. The base of the pons, the basal artery. I think that's easy. If you have a stroke of the vertebral artery, a blockage of the vertebral artery, say right here, you affect the pons. Directly speaking. The answer is no. You affect the spinal cord and or the medulla, depending on how far up you are, but not the pons. If you have a basilar stroke, you affect the pons. You betcha, big time. And the midbrain. So know the order in which these things come together and kind of where in the brainstem and the brain we're talking about. The circumvillus is this structure right here. See, that's a circle. Got some really thin parts of the circle, but you could get in a boat and go round and round in a circle forever. Circumvillus. More about that in a few minutes. That's a really important thing to understand. But the main point of the basal system, it's the brain stem, the purple part, and the cerebellum sits on top. I'll go back a few slides. Remember this? Here's the brain stem. Midbrain, pons, the medulla, and the cerebellum. And if you're paying really close attention, is there one other part affected? Not curious. The back of the cortex, the posterior cortex. The brainstem and cerebellum, and ultimately, when we get to that point, the back of the cortex. Here's a bottom view. This may make it easier. Hope it does. I got a better picture of the circumvillus in a minute. If you hold the brain upside down and looked at it, here's the cerebellum. In blue is the posterior circulation. Blue is the posterior circulation. Cerebellum is the bottom part of it. The brain stem is here. So the blue part is posterior circulation, and so is the white part. Blue and the white part together, they got the entire posterior circulation, the vertebral basilar system. The other colors, the purple color and the red color, we're coming to. The internal circulation. It's kind of a general introduction, then we're going to do it as we're all going to do the more detailed part. The carotid artery comes out, eventually off the heart. The common carotid splits up into the external carotid. Does the external carotid go to the brain? No. A few people every semester miss that. It's a choice of the test. The external carotid does not go to the brain. So what does it go to? We care about it. We do care, but not in neurology. Goes to the face, right? Branches off here in the neck. But we care about this part, the anterior part. The carotid artery has two divisions, the anterior and the middle cerebral artery. The anterior and middle cerebral artery come off of the carotid artery. That's these colors. That's the purple part and the red part I mentioned. The anterior cerebral artery is in the front. Anterior, that's kind of hard to remember, isn't it? The middle cerebral artery is kind of in the middle. That's not too bad. The posterior cerebral artery is in the back. Is the posterior cerebral artery part of the anterior circulation? No. The posterior circulation. So if you had a problem with your anterior circulation, someone strangled you, like this. It blocks your carotid artery, your boyfriend / girlfriend, whoever strangles you. Make it like gender neutral, right? They strangle you, and you occlude both carotid arteries as you block them off, and you have a big stroke. Which part of the brain will be not affected? This part. Unfortunately, you're going to lose this part. You're not going to survive. But this part will be unaffected. Conversely, if someone breaks your neck, girlfriend slash boyfriend decides to break their neck. Listen. You're going to compromise the vertebral basilisk. You're going to twist the vessel. I'll tell you a story if you want it later. This part's going to die, but not this part and not the anterior part. Maybe we should do that now. Okay. It's New Year's Eve. I got the bill call. So, sorry. At 11:30, I was asked to come down and see this 23-year-old lady who had been to the chiropractor that afternoon because she was going to go to the chiropractor, get her spine adjusted, and then go out for New Year's Eve party. But when the chiropractor was doing his thing, he noticed that when he manipulated it, he twisted her neck a little bit. That's part of the chiropractor, actually. He was twisting the neck and spine. That all of a sudden she said, "I have a headache," and started throwing up. I said, "Well, that's not normal." And she was clumsy. It was uncoordinated when he asked her to sit up. She kind of fell over. I said, "This is not good. Send her to the emergency room." So the emergency room, go through waiting in the ER kind of thing. They finally called me at 11:30 at night to come see her. And I came down to see her. She had had, she was beginning to worsen, beginning to deteriorate, unfortunately. And she did survive, but not much capacity left. But she was able to understand what I said to her. She could answer questions. She could follow the commands. But she was really clumsy on one side. She couldn't reach the one arm like this. The other arm was pretty active. Couldn't speak. I couldn't understand a word she said. She would answer questions, but I couldn't understand it. It was so mumbled and disjointed speech that it was unintelligible, except maybe every 10th word. But it seemed to be appropriate. The word or two I could pick out. And she wasn't able to stand or sit straight. What happened? Did she have an anterior circulation or a posterior circulation problem?
Posterior.
What happened? In mechanical, what happened on the table? When she was being adjusted, the adjustment went too far, or she was susceptible, or something. For some reason, I said there wasn't there. Her vertebral artery got stretched. Right? And clogged off the vertebral artery. Closed off. So what kind of problems would she have had? Should we go back? Is her vertebral artery on one side? Blocks off. The neck is, they're coming up the vertebral columns, and so you twist the neck, these stay still, this rotates, you stretch it, get that idea. She wipes out this part, and she also affected the pons and her cerebellum on one side. Okay, so that was the, where her anterior and middle cerebral artery is okay. We never knew. She did not have at least one, and perhaps two. She was more asymmetric, so she sort of damaged one more than me. But she had such dysfunction. Because her brain began to swell. She was in ICU for weeks and weeks.
So
and then a lot of brain damage.
If you think
about
one cerebral artery, then you can
join. That's the part we're coming to. But his point is, okay, so you wipe out one, who cares? Don't you have another one that can supply it? So you wipe this one out. It should not make any difference, except right here. Because this one is intact, supplying blood flow. That's correct. So there must have been something either wrong with this one, he stretch both of them, keep the both of these arteries, or she didn't have this textbook picture. Maybe she didn't have a vertebral artery, but this was very small. She got unlucky. Or she had too many cheeseburgers and this was damaged. It was clogged up.
Dr. Nelson, with her eyesight, have been affected?
Yeah. Was her visual, could she see, if I held up one finger and say, hold up, do what I'm doing, could she do it?
Yes.
Could you follow a visual command? Yes. Yes. But she had, no. Hang on those questions. That's a good question. I'm going to try to answer them in a few minutes. So don't don't, let me forget about them. This is the middle view, right? A sagittal section. The posterior part. This is what they're concerned about. If I've had an posterior circulation problem, have we not damaged visual cortex? Is that the concern? And the answer is she still had one intact side, so she could use that to see. That's the short answer to your question. But the middle cerebral artery is dead center, right in the very middle. So the very center part of the brain is the middle cerebral artery. That's useful to remember. Useful to remember, because we're talking about the basal ganglia, the thalamus, etc. In succeeding lectures, we're going to forget all about the stupid blood vessels. But if you can just remember, the middle cerebral artery is in the middle of the brain, the geographic center of the brain, the geographic middle of the brain, that will help you. And look how far back the anterior cerebral artery goes. It goes all the way back to here. Back to here. So this is my anterior cerebral artery right here. Even though it's pretty far back. The anterior cerebral artery. The kind of carotid. Goes up to the base, to the circuit of Willis, and it goes on the medial surface of the brain, the middle of the brain. So I just mentioned right here is my anterior cerebral artery. But if I come down, am I still the anterior cerebral artery? The answer is no. I've moved to the what artery? Go back a slide. Up here is. The very tip top is, but as soon as you come down laterally, it's the middle cerebral artery. So the anterior cerebral artery is only in the midline. Only in the midline. Only in the midline. See inside you? You can barely see it. But if you look at the midline part, oh, that's easy to see now. So the anterior cerebral artery has come up the very middle, right? You're going to come up, here it is, right? It comes right through here on the medial surface and just does the medial hemisphere. That's how you're going to make a diagnosis on a practice. Because I'm going to tell you about a patient who have a stroke and they can't move their leg, but the arm is okay. Anybody remember the homunculus from any other class? Where are the legs? The motor part of the legs. They're right here. This is the leg part. The arm part. Is here. Arm and the face are on the side. A different cerebral artery that does the legs versus the arm and the face. Is that clear? We'll come back to that idea. Back to work. The orbital medial surface. I just what I just said, right? The middle part and the bottom part. Orbital, above the orbits, orbital medial surface of the frontal lobes. Because the frontal lobe goes all the way back here. Frontal lobe goes way back. If you have a stroke, what would you predict to happen? Crosses the legs and feet. But not the arm and not the face. That's the middle cerebral artery. It's also, it wipes out the front part, the anterior frontal lobe. It's going to cause frontal lobe problems. Judgment. Deciding to get up and do something. Yeah, my house is on fire. I need to get out of this chair and go outside. I need to get on the phone and call someone. I need to get busy today. I'll do it in a second. Or just for 1 minute, for a little bit longer, and then I'll get up and do that. In general, we're coming back to what the frontal lobes do, but in general, feet and judgment. Feet and judgment. Anterior cerebral artery. I mentioned before that the middle cerebral artery goes to the very deep parts, the center parts of the brain. The thalamus and the basal ganglia in particular. The lateral part of the brain, out here, the cortex part, if it's not doing the legs and the feet, does the arms and the face. It does language. I mentioned this when I was describing, could follow my commands. I asked her to do something, she would do it. She could understand what I said to her. Because her cortex, her language cortex, Broca's and Wernicke's area, was okay. People with posterior communication, posterior circulation strokes, have intact language. But anterior strokes, involves the middle cerebral artery, don't. How about anterior cerebral artery? People have anterior cerebral artery stroke, do they have intact language? Language is out here on the side. Here's language where my hand is. People have anterior strokes, okay? I'm sorry, the anterior stream artery stroke? Yes, they're fine. They can't move their legs. They can speak to you normally and understand you normally. The fancy term for language dysfunction is aphasia. Everybody should know what aphasia is. We're going to talk about it ad nauseum. And finally, something we'll talk about in detail at the end of the semester is neglect. Neglect means the contralateral world does not exist. Contralateral world does not exist. Especially if you have a stroke of the right middle cerebral artery. But either left or right will do it, but the right more common. Which of these is going to be the most useful for a test? It's going to be aphasia and arm and face weakness. If you just know those two, you're good. You'll be good. I'm glad we'll emphasize later. So the penetrating arteries. It's a good name for them, right? They penetrate. You see them penetrate deep into the brain. They go to motor parts of the brain. The basal ganglia, the motor part. So they're going to cause really bad hemiplegia. Hemiplegia means paralysis. Contralateral paralysis. If they affect the somatosensory cortex, you impair sensation. The thalamus. Remember the somatosensory, the medial meniscus pathway comes up into the thalamus and it branches up to the somatosensory cortex. Here's the thalamus, the very center part. You can wipe out sensation. Well, what's going to be easiest to test? The motor part. Hemiplegia means half. Plegia is paralysis. And this one we already know about, the posterior cerebral artery. What could you tell? Not very much. Cerebellar symptoms, discoordination. The thing that's most useful to you, most useful, is this thing up here. They can't see to the contralateral side. Fancy way to say homonymous hemianopsia. They can't see to the contralateral side. So this person has had a stroke of their right posterior cerebral artery. The right occipital lobe is damaged. They cannot see to their left. Not the left eye, to the left in both eyes. Does that make sense? Their visual field is diminished. Contralateral. Contralateral visual field. What do these words mean? Well, opsia is see, and means can, it means half, they can't see half of the world. And homonymous means that it's nice and they can't see any of the visual field. The whole thing is gone. The whole half is gone. The cerebellar symptoms, of course, because of the cerebellum. The circle of Willis. Yay. Let's get back to it. The basal artery. What feeds into the basal artery? What two structures? Two arteries. The vertebral arteries. Two arteries come and make it. The blood flow is heading this way. It gets the circle drawn into red. The red, what you should be able to do is to get in a boat. I'll put you in a boat on a test and say, we're heading up the right posterior communicating artery. Where do we go to next? What's our next stop? Where do we turn? Right, you're going to turn to the middle cerebral artery, and then this little bitty tiny thing, the anterior communicating artery. Really, really short, unfortunately has lots of common place to have a disorder from, an aneurysm especially. Then you cross over to the other side, and you come to the middle cerebral artery, and then the connection of the posterior communicating artery. So what blood vessel connects the anterior to the posterior circulation? What connects the anterior to the posterior? Anybody got it? Anybody want to speak up? So I didn't hear any correct answers. The murmuring was not correct. That's right. That murmuring got better. It's this one, the posterior communicating artery. that's the way, in case you lose one, the anterior or the posterior circulation, you've got another way to supply things. That's what the circle of Willis is for, is to provide a redundant blood supply. In case you lose part, you've got another shot at getting blood, another way to get blood into it. That's why we talk about it, why this matters. There are some people who are born, just genetically speaking, who don't have one of these. They just don't have a posterior communicating artery on one side. It's ain't there. Never was and never will be there. If they lose this one, they're in big trouble. They've now dissociated their anterior and posterior circulations. Well, that's okay. And if they never had this one, they lose this one, they're still fine, right? They're okay. Unless what other thing happens? They have a stroke here or a stroke up there. Enough about anatomy. How about some disorders to make this more real? Moya moya. You might speak Japanese or know what moya moya means. Well, I don't speak Japanese very well. I just speak a few words of it. But moya moya means a puff of cigarette smoke drifting through the breeze. That's very poetic, right? A puff of cigarette smoke drifting through the breeze. This is an arteriogram, a normal one. They're taking the dot, the person is laid on the table, they're sedated, they take a catheter, they put it in the groin, they run it up the artery, through the heart, up the carotid artery, and right about here, here's the catheter tip, they stop, we're about, the tip of the catheter is right here, where my fingertip is. And the syringe, they're going to inject some dye. When they inject the dye, they take an x-ray of it, that's all they do. Because the dye stays in the blood vessel, you get a picture of the blood vessels. Internal carotid is going to, if you inject dye into that, you're going to illuminate, you're going to delineate two cerebral arteries. Which one are they? The ACA and the MCA. Not the posterior cerebral artery. That's back here somewhere, but you can't see it because the dye didn't get into it. If you had injected the vertebral artery, you would have the posterior cerebral artery light up, and not these two. So that's not moya moya. So what's moya moya? Here's an normal. Here's an abnormal. Does anybody see, with your mind's eye at least, a puff of cigarette smoke drifting through the air? And I can see that, right? Take a light a cigarette, put it on the depth, and watch the cigarette smoke drift off. It's just like this. So what is this thing? It's not cigarette smoke. What's happening?
One of the there's been a blockage deep, so the auxiliary little arteries opened up to help.
That's right. So one of the big arteries was blocked or narrow. Right here, this is very narrow. And so what happened? The little tiny vessels that were supposed to stay tiny, they were called upon to take more and more blood, so they got bigger. There's a limit to how much they can do, but they got bigger. So the moya moya tells you that you've had a blockage. This takes many, many months to years to do. So a chronic blockage, but not complete blockage, right? A gradual blockage make it become complete over time, but a gradual blockage and these blood vessels expand. That's called collateral circulation. Collateral means along the side, circulation along the side. Another way to get blood around. This is very common in Down syndrome. Three or four patients with Down syndrome who have got moya moya disease.
Does this person exhibit many symptoms?
There's no symptoms whatsoever. So what's the problem? There aren't any symptoms. Is this a disorder at all? What is this person at risk to do? Are these blood vessels here normal? They're much bigger than they're supposed to be, but are they normal? You make a blood vessel bigger. You also make the blood wall thinner. Make them thinner. They're more likely to break. So the more likely thing to happen is for these to have a rupture, and now you've had a stroke. That's the problem. So they're prone to stroke. Plus, this vessel here is getting smaller and smaller. When it eventually clogs off, you may only have 90% or 80% of the blood flow that you need. So you lose a little bit of the cell.
lateral circulation may not be complete.
Same thing.
There's a blockage. Can you follow the dye up here? See it taper, and then finally it stops. Something has made this blood vessel taper. It could be too many cheeseburgers, atherosclerosis, be fatty collection. It could be an abnormal blood vessel itself. It could be a tumor, compressing. A lot of things can make it small. It could be inflammation. And here's the collateral circulation. The prognosis is better if the blockage occurs gradually. Does that make any sense? Is that what you'd expect, or is that counterintuitive? Not sure? Yeah, it gives you time to build these blood vessels to get stretched, takes time. What's better? So a word or two only about stroke itself. How common is it? The number three cause of death. It is the number one cause for chronic functional incapacity. About 2 million adults in the United States are incapacitated due to stroke. It's usually focal. What does focal mean in neurology? It's one part of the body, not the other. It's acute. What does acute mean? It happens like this. Then gradually come on over a couple of days or a couple of weeks or a couple of months. 10:30 this morning, I'm sitting in my chair and all of a sudden, I couldn't move my left arm. The pathology. There are two categories of stroke we already talked about, right? We give you some numbers to it, some details attached to it. You can have a bleed, which we call a hemorrhagic stroke. That's how you spell hemorrhagic. Or, a lot more commonly, a block, which is another word for block, is occlusion. It's the same thing, occlusion. Most strokes are block strokes. The blood vessel here is abnormal for a variety of reasons. Again, maybe too much cholesterol, maybe other things that have gone along with it, and it suddenly clots off. When it clots, blood gets to here and stops. So all the brain tissue from here back doesn't get any more blood. The brain tissue cannot survive more than about 6 to 8 minutes without blood supply. You got a little bit of time, but not very much. If you have a hemorrhage, of course the blood wall, the vessel wall here is ruptured, and now blood is all over the place. Which one would you think is better for the prognosis? If you had to choose, I can have either hemorrhagic stroke or occlusive stroke. Which one do you want to pick? You would think hemorrhagic. Now you would be right, wrong to think that, but you're right to think it. In other words, the answer is you want this kind. The prognosis is worse for this. And the reason is a little, think about it, not counterintuitive. One reason is that blood itself is toxic to brain cells. That's crazy. But how can blood, which you need to keep brain cells alive, kill brain cells directly? Because the blood is supposed to be inside the blood vessel, not in contact with the neuron. It causes the neurons to become inflamed. It turns on inflammatory cascades, and the neurons kill themselves. It also acts by creating pressure. You get a big clot of blood, and a big clot of blood smashes on the brain. Creates more pressure. And another thing, if you have a bleed here, there's no blood getting by. If there's a bleed, blood flow stops entirely. If you've got a blockage here, maybe 10% or 5% or 4% the blood's getting through. So maybe a few of the cells here get a little bit of blood to survive. Blood flow to the brain. Well, I have blood flow. What's blood flow for? You know this from at least seventh grade biology. It gives you oxygen. It gives you glucose. The brain can only use glucose for energy. It can't use anything else. That's a big limit to the brain. It's a big problem the brain has. But evolutionary speaking, that's what it decided to do. It takes away a couple of byproducts, carbon dioxide and lactic acid. A few seconds without blood flow, you're perfectly fine. There's no change whatsoever. But 6 to 8 minutes leads to what's called an infarction. Infarction is the death of brain cells. Infarction, good word to know. Person's had a cerebral infarction. That means they've had a blockage or a rupture of the vessel. Neurons have died because of it. You can have a transient ischemic attack, a TIA. Have you ever heard of a TIA?
Yes,
TA by its definition is not infarction. You had a short amount of blockage, but not enough to kill the neurons. It's okay. It's a warning something bad may be happening in the future, but right now you're okay. If it's transient and short enough, brain cells recover. But 6 to 8 minutes is not a long period of time. The word occlusion, blockage, lack of oxygen means ischemia. Ischemia is a lack of blood flow. Ischemic damage, ischemic stroke. There are two ways the blood vessels can have an ischemia. Two ways. One is you can have a perfectly normal blood vessel. You get stuck with something right in the middle of it, a clot. Here's a clot that's living in the heart. The heart's the problem. The heart's making clots, little collections of fibrin, platelets, cholesterol sometimes, a little stuck in it. It's sitting in the heart rate, and then for some reason it breaks off. It's glued to the vessel wall here, but the heart, you know, is pumping up a storm, and all of a sudden it breaks off. Where's it going to go? It's going to follow the blood flow, right? It's now a raft on a river, and the raft takes it up here. It takes it north. If it's coming from the heart, what are the two cerebral territories that might be affected? Anterior and middle superior. Could it be the posterior? No. So if someone's had a posterior cerebral artery stroke, looking for clots in their heart is a waste of your time. That's called embolism. Right? That's the fancy name for it. More commonly a little bit is too many cheeseburgers. Blood vessels themselves are abnormal in the brain. The lumen, the inner part, gets narrower and narrower and narrower over time as the vessel wall gets narrow because the cholesterol is collecting along the vessel wall. It's not pure cholesterol, but a big plaque of cholesterol. Congratulations. Atherosclerosis. They've heard that term, atherosclerosis. That's what it is. Which one of these is going to have a sudden onset? A sudden problem, which one is a slightly more gradual? The embolism is sudden. It's going to be much more rapid. It'll be 10, 15 hours maximum a week. The person who's got the cheeseburger thing may say, well, at 10 o'clock this morning, well, if I'm starting getting weak, and the week by 11, and by noon, by 12:30, couldn't move it off. Subtle difference, but important. An ischemic stroke. You might want to show me the stroke. Any volunteer radiologist? That's right. Is this a CT scan or an MRI? Anybody know? CT scan, that's right. And what he pointed to was there a dark spot right here. That's the stroke. There's a subtle asymmetry of the ventricle. Why? Because when the cells here are dying, they start swelling. And they begin to swell. That sucks in water, and it pushes the ventricle this way. Called a mass effect, right? Acting like a little structure, like a very tiny mass. So we'll go way over time. The brain cells here have died. This is an infarction, right? Dead brain cells. An infarction. It's just one place. One place. Presumably the artery that goes right to here. You might want to take a guess at which one it is. It'll be anterior, middle, or posterior, true one. This is the ridge of the brain we're talking about. Here's the caudate nucleus, and here's the thalamus. Does that help? Middle cerebral artery. Penetrating branches of the middle cerebral artery. We already figured it out. Okay. You might conversely have a pattern like this. This is an MRI scan. Your radiologist, we got the golden era, so you got some white spots here, and some over here, and one here, and one here. You got them scattered different places. They're all the same hemisphere, but they're scattered up here, back here, here. This is the posterior cerebral artery. This is the anterior cerebral artery. Now, this is actually the back of the middle cerebral artery. In the very center part, called the middle cerebral artery. So anterior and two middle. Anterior circulation still, but now two different, widely distant cerebral territories. How could that happen? There's only one way it can happen. Almost one. It's an embolus, right? You've got clots from the heart, and the clots are shooting up from the heart. Sometimes they go up the anterior cerebral artery. Sometimes they go up the middle cerebral artery. Luck of the draw. And so you get a multifocal, multifocal, mini spot stroke. So if you see this kind of pattern, start looking at the heart first, not their cholesterol level. Does that make sense? Those are occlusive strokes. Hemorrhage. Several kinds of hemorrhage one can have. Not too many. They're all described anatomically. You can have a hemorrhage in the center part of the brain. That's the white stuff. White stuff is just blood. A big clot in the blood. It's a bad place to have a hemorrhage. Intracerebral, inside the cerebral. Self-explanatory. More common is to have a hemorrhage right here. Anybody see that? That hemorrhage is underneath the dura. So what should we call it? Called a subdural hemorrhage. Okay. You can have a hemorrhage. There it points to this thing. Here's an arteriogram again. Anterior cerebral artery, middle cerebral artery. And there's a big round spot. No blood vessels should be like a sphere. Right? No blood vessels should look like a balloon. It looked like a balloon because this is an aneurysm. What does an aneurysm mean? We're going to go over that in a second. So here's a drawing of an aneurysm. There's a blood vessel. Blood vessel right here, and then the wall of blood vessel at the spot right where I'm showing has gotten weak. It may have been congenital, may have been from an infection, may have been from trauma. Sometimes we don't know what the cause is, but right here. This might make it clear. So the normal vessel is here, and this part here is because the vessel wall here is very weak. It's exactly like your tire, right? You may have a bleb on your tire. Same thing. That's where your tire is likely to rupture. That's why you have to get it fixed. So this person is undergoing surgery for their aneurysm. I don't know if it's a he or she, it's not my patient. It's the anterior cerebral artery. Can anybody see this, or should I do something to light? Is that ready for total darkness? I'm not too total darkness. Is that okay? Nope. Yes, no?
Still in terms of seeing the back.
Is that better? I stay awake a little bit. Nerve surgery is sometimes not very exciting. Okay. Here's the anterior cerebral artery. This is the anterior communicating artery. Can anybody see that?
Nope.
I'm in the way, aren't I?
Here's the anterior cerebral artery. It goes up this way. The anterior communicating artery is right here. It's a little short thing, right? The other anterior cerebral artery would go up this way. The circle of Willis is right here. I mean, you can't see it. That's the circle of Willis. So what the guy is doing, Michael Morales, he is sucking out the water kind of gets in the way. See this thing right here? That's the aneurysm. Anybody see that? If you look closely, I can see it pulsing. You probably can't see it pulse. They're going to take the meninges off of the aneurysm. What's the point of this? Why muck around with an aneurysm? Why just leave it alone? Same reason you can't leave your tire alone, it starts to bleed, because that's a weakness of the wall, and eventually it's going to get weaker and weaker. And it's bigger and bigger, weaker and weaker walls as they grow until they finally rupture. And that's bad news. So how could you fix one? Let's say you're the surgeon. You've got, it looks like this diagram. Here's a picture of one. How could you fix it? If you could, there are different ways you could do it, I suppose. What's the safest way? The safest way that he's going to do it. Which I think is coming. The aneurysm itself is not a problem. The problem is that it might rupture. The vessel wall is weak right here. What if you took some kind of device and tied it right here? Put some thread and tied it right to there. That's what he's fixing to do right now. Here's the aneurysm. Can anybody see the aneurysm?
No?
No? Is it my fault or just the picture? The aneurysm right here. Here's a clip, a piece of metal, right? I'm going to take it. I put it right on top of the anterior cerebral artery. It's going to, now the anterior cerebral artery is blocked off. That's bad, right? You don't have much time. This is the work quickly part. So that's why they ended that. And now, here's the neck of the aneurysm. You take another clip, and as soon as he lets it go, about, now, you've done it. He's taken a clip and put it right here. Take it off real fast, and you're done. The operation's over. Yeah. Slow him back up, but the operation is finished. Real simple thing to do.
Just leave the clip in his head?
Forever. You don't want it to ever come off, right? If they come off, what bad thing happens? You go back to where you're headed. The patient then dies in the aneurysm. So the clip stays in there forever. You hope. You'll be able to fall off. They don't. Some models have greater ability to fall off than others.
What happens to the aneurysm?
The aneurysm is still there, but you don't care, right?
What metal do you use?
I block my hand. That's a great question. So how do you know it's there? If it doesn't have any symptoms, how can you tell? The most common way is what's called a sentinel leak. Sentinel leak. Sentinel means a warning leak. The aneurysm ruptures a little bit, squirts a little blood out, and then manages to clot off real quick. And so the patient has the worst headache of their life. It's a horrible headache, only lasts for 3 hours, and I'm okay. But I've never had a headache like this before in my entire life. You head out in the emergency room, think, I wonder if this person's had an aneurysm. Maybe they should have an imaging study, an arteriogram, and or MRI, to look for an arteriogram, for an aneurysm. Yep, you do have one. You told our surgeon, this man's had sentinel hemorrhage. Can you do it? No, we can't do it today, but we can do it tomorrow. Is that okay?
No.
Yes, right. But not 2 years from now, not 8 months from now. That makes sense? So, same thing. It's hard to see. You take a clip. Since it was called a balloon aneurysm, they just put it right here. A balloon, like a balloon. Okay. What else can go wrong with blood vessels besides aneurysm? Arteriovenous malformations. Compared to the surgical treatment of an aneurysm, this is really, really complicated. This is hard. So that we're sure you can pay the big bucks to figure this one out. Here's an MRI, right? An MRI with all the brain filtered out and just the blood vessels left, called MR angiography. Here's the blood vessel. What's wrong with stuff up here? It looks like moya moya. Here's a drawing of it. It's an abnormal congenital malformation of the blood vessels. The veins and the arteries got all mixed up. And they look like this, a big tangle. So you have big vessels, really, really big vessels, going directly into really, really big veins. You bypass the brain tissue. It's not a good thing for the brain tissue. And these, by definition, these are abnormal blood vessels. And abnormal blood vessels might sometimes rupture. You have the same problem. So the treatment is somehow to figure out some way to get rid of these blood vessels. And that's what's hard, because where would you cut? Where would you fix? Where would you start? This vessel here, or this one, or this one, or this one? That's really, really hard. People are not always in agreement about which. How are we going to treat this? You try to identify the leading, the biggest vein, sorry, the biggest artery that goes into it, and tie it off. And hope that there's enough collateral circulation, remember, to supply the brain tissue that big artery was going to. Sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. Patients left with a chunk of dead brain that you caused the stroke yourself when you closed off that feeding artery. But the choice between that is having the phlegm rupture and the patient died. Tricky decisions. What else can go wrong? Blood vessel can become inflamed. The fancy name for that is vasculitis. Vascu, blood vessel, litis. Litis is inflammation. Here's an autopsy picture of one. It's a biopsy picture. Here's the blood. Here's the brain. Here's the blood vessel. The blood vessel has got really thick wall. Look how thick it is. That means there's not much place for blood to go in. Not much blood can pass through this blood vessel. Because the inflammation has thickened the blood vessel wall. And here's an arteriogram.
from the carotid artery. Follow this up. Look at this sausages. See the link of sausages? It's also called beading, like beads. Also called string of pearls. That's all kind of names, right? But you get the idea that every so often, right here and right here and right here, there's this really big, severe narrowing of the lumen, that is to say the interior part of the blood vessel, because of inflammation. Why is the inflammation skipped like this? Nobody has any idea. But things can cause vasculitis. There's some rare things and some really common things. And more common things, you'll probably be surprised, is cocaine. People snort cocaine, don't usually snort pure cocaine, do they? You have cocaine plus other stuff. And the other stuff in the blood vessels causes a reaction in the blood vessels, spasm like this, develop these big artery walls. And cocaine also raises your blood pressure. So over time, first you develop vasculitis, then you have one more dose of cocaine, your blood pressure goes up, and you rupture right here. So you have an intracerebral hemorrhage. So vasculitis is a common accompaniment of cocaine. It also happens with infections, flu, certain genetic disorders, the body effects. So vasculitis. No questions about vasculitis? Would that be a sudden thing or a gradual development? It'd be gradual, right? It takes time for the blood vessel walls to become inflamed, to get big.
Would there be any symptoms before?
No, there aren't any symptoms. Until the blood vessels start getting narrow enough, now you're not getting enough blood flow, and now you begin to have symptoms. That's the beginning part, there's no symptoms whatsoever. So blood gets into the head. We described how it gets in. It's got to get out. It gets out through the dural sinuses. You might know why they're called dural sinuses. But what's the sinus mean? You have sinus cavities. Mine are acting up. Yours probably are too. These are different places. This is not the sinuses. You know it's the same word. It is a different thing. It means a cavity. A dural cavity. There's a cavity inside the dura. Remember? We talked about dura a really long time ago. I mentioned it. What? Yes. A triangle. We're sorry. The dura really has two. The dura is really up two layers. And there's some places where that layer is split apart. And now you've got a cavity inside the dura. Does that make sense? So your dura forms two layers. In some places, it makes a hole. It splits those two layers, and now you can put blood here. You can run big blood vessels through it. Those are the dural sinuses. That's what we mean, the big vessels. These are the big veins. There are lots of chiasms. We're not going to worry about the chiasms. Which ones do we have to know? A few, not too many. Not too bad. The names give them away mostly. The superior sagittal sinus, that's this guy right up here. Superior, must be on the top. It is. It's sagittal, it runs sagittally. Which way is sagittal? It means this way. It's the vein on the top that goes back and forth, front to back. Right here, superior sagittal sinus. There's one right underneath it that does the same thing. What do you think it's called? That's right. See how easy this is? Anatomy is so easy. The inferior sagittal sinus. The big one is superior, the little one is inferior. They all come together and they're gonna meet right here. They meet this thing called the straight sinus. Straight sinus is shaped straight. It's a straight vein. Everything else is curved. But the straight sinus, the only one of these guys that is straight. So on a picture, hard to miss. It's the one that points to that's straight. From here to here. That makes sense? So they all drain together. It's called the confluence of the sinuses. Which we don't have to know that one. And then, can you tell from this picture that they branch out? Then the very center, right in the midline, and then they go to both sides, sideways. So they come down the back of the skull, like this, and they get to this part, they go laterally, one to either side. They go transversely. They go from being right in the midline to going laterally. The transverse sinuses. Right here, from here to here. Preparing to head on out now, right? They go with this thing, it has an S shape. See the S shape here? Sort of kind of S shape. The sigmoid sinus. What's sigma? Greek letter for S. Sigmoid sinus. That's what I have to know about, so I didn't put it down. You're okay with that. What's this final vein here? We're down here now.
Jugular vein, the internal jugular vein. From there to the heart. Same thing, a different way to put it. And a picture, instead of drawing a picture of things. Here's, on the very top, right in the midline, what's number one? Superior sagittal sinus, right? And down below that, number three, is the inferior sagittal sinus. The straight sinus is this part right here. How about number two and number four that go out this way? The transverse sinus. So there's one other thing we didn't talk about in that last one. One other sinus, not very big, it's the cavernous sinus. It's really not part of that big thing, so why talk about it? Because neurologically speaking, it's very important. It's this thing right here. Cavernous sinus. It's part of the cavern. Cavern is a cave, right? And where's this cave? The cave is right behind your eyes. In the middle. Right behind your eyes. And it's right next to the sinus cavity. So one of the bad complications having sinus disease, sinus infection, is the infection can travel from the sinus. Here's the sinus. See that big cave here. Pass through and join the vein. And now you've got infection inside the venous system. And that can be bad. On the other side of the blood-brain barrier, that's the cavernous sinus. The cavernous sinus.
So is it here in the cavernous sinus, how does it pass? Are they like a baby? Because I had a sister in college, she passed out.
If that's what happened, how long was she in the hospital?
They gave us some medicine and then they
released her. That's not what she had. So if you get the infection in this region, go back. And the infection is right here in the cavernous sinus. The infection is now on the other side of the blood-brain barrier. Remember the blood-brain barrier? If you get antibiotics in there, it's really, really hard. You can do it if you take high doses, intravenous antibiotics, for enough weeks at a time. But not go home. Yeah. Because the, remember the cranial nerves? Anybody remember the cranial nerves from a really long time ago? The cranial nerves pass through the cavernous sinus. Which ones? The ones that go into the eye. V1 and V2 pass through here. So cranial number 6 goes right through there. So if you've got a cavernous sinus infection, we'll have a 6th nerve palsy. We'll also have lack of feeling in the face right here. So here's an MRI scan of the patient. What does this patient have? Might have been like when you, or like they were suspected. Person had began having headache. She was pregnant. Began having headache. Headaches got really bad. Went to see a regular doctor. I don't know why she had headaches. She was pregnant. Pregnant ladies get headaches. But they got to be excruciating headache. Then she began having trouble with the coordination. But that's not part of pregnancy. It's maybe being top heavy. Bottom heavy is one, but not having trouble reaching for the milk. Sent to the ER, and she eventually had an MR scan. The MR scan was abnormal. Now, amateur radiologist, neurologist, remember what that is? Lots of pain with this, right? Well, if you're not excited, don't work for nothing. All you can do is be wrong.
I'm wrong all the time.
They're wrong, they took it, they can say. So something's wrong with this. That's right. What she pointed to accurately was some part, some blood vessel we've already just memorized. If you wallow this all the way up, right about here, it's abnormal. It's on top, it's in the midline part, sagittal midline, the very top. What is this called? Superior sagittal sinus. It's full of a clot. She's got a clot inside. And here's the clot. Blood flow is not moving in there. Of itself, that's not a big issue. Why? Because there are other ways around it. But what happens over time is this clot will extend and expand and grow. And we'll go from that to, right now the clot goes from here to here. There are other ways for blood to get out of the brain. But over time, they become affected. And now the clot wipes out all the way for blood to get out of the brain. So what happens to the blood? Blood can't get out, the heart's still pumping it in. What does the brain do?
Starts swelling. It's a pressure effect.
And that's bad.
That make sense? So how does this treat it?
You're making the clot, the clot's getting worse and worse. Your blood is clotting. If you had some drug that make the blood stop clotting, you could do this. And so that's how it's treated. So give the patient drugs to make it stop clotting. Anti-clotting drug. Heparin, if you know heparin. Triptan. Questions so far?
On the previous slide,
did you
treat that with streptokinase? I know you said heparin, but
could
kinase be used as
blood
to decrease that?
But she said, instead of using a drug to stop clotting, what if we did work down more aggressive and used a drug that actually made the clot dissolve? One stops it from forming, heparin, another drug dissolves the clot already formed. That's what she says, and that's what it does. You can take a catheter. Remember the catheter we saw in the arteriogram? Same catheter, same idea. Instead of snaking up to the carotid, you snake it up to here. You put the catheter right here, and then you start injecting a drug, streptokinase, urokinase, that dissolves the clot here. You have to do this over and over again, day after day. I dissolve a little bit here, and a little bit here, and a little bit here, because the clots beget clots. That's the problem. As long as you have a clot there, it's trying to grow. And you've got to kill it faster than the clot can grow. That make sense? What should we do with this? This was really more of an extra slide kind of thing. Every lecture has extra slides to be used if you want. You might see them again on the practicum, but there won't be any new information in those slides that wasn't in the previous non-extra slide part. What artery is this? The middle cerebral artery. That's good. The things that it goes to. That's why I showed it was the parts of the brain, the functions that are affected if you have a middle cerebral artery territory structure. It affects Broca's area, sensory cortex, auditory cortex, other parts. I've already told you what these do. Wernicke's and Broca's give you an aphasia, which is a language dysfunction. If you've got aphasia, you've got a language dysfunction, it is the middle cerebral artery is to blame. The medial part. Is this the anterior, middle, or posterior cerebral artery? Mid-sagittal section. Here, these are the limb. The legs are right here. The anterior cerebral artery. I think we should stop here. Before you leave, it's time to see you about Friday. You can have a review session on Friday, or not, as you wish. How many people vote have one? That's it.